Welcome to episode 36 of the Fredcast for Tuesday, September 26th, 2006. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. Welcome back to another special edition of the Fredcast. This is our second special show of the week, coming to you live, well, almost live, from Las Vegas, Nevada. Today's episode, day two of the 2006 Interbike Outdoor Demo from Boulder City, Nevada, including lots of bike reviews and interviews. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Welcome back to our special Interbike 2006 week of the Fredcast. This is episode two for this week, so if you're listening to this and you haven't heard episode one, press stop, go back and listen to yesterday's episode. It did get posted this morning due to some issues with the so-called high-speed internet access at my plush Las Vegas accommodations, so make sure that you've listened to that one before you go ahead and listen to this one. Go ahead, I'll wait. Hey, welcome back to the Fredcast. Glad you're here for day two of the 2006 Interbike Outdoor Demo. And I've got to tell you, this should be more than 2 days. There just are too many bicycles to test. And what you're going to hear is all I had a chance to do was talk to people about road bikes and only ride road bikes. Unfortunately, didn't have a single opportunity to ride a mountain bike, even though we did talk to Doug Stewart from Mountain Cycle in yesterday's show. Well, one of the first people that I met today was Josh Hahn, and Josh is the vice president of DeHaan. DeHaan is the market leader in folding bikes, and I've got to tell you, their booth was unbelievably crowded. Now, you could say that it's because they were giving away hats and socks for everybody who test rode one of their bikes, or you could simply say it's because of the bikes themselves. Doesn't really matter why people were there, because it was interesting listening to everybody that came back. It didn't matter which one of DeHaan's bikes that they rode. They all came back with a smile on their face and extremely surprised that they had just ridden a folding bike and it rode just that well. So I had a chance to talk to Josh about his market-leading company, and this is what he had to say. I am sitting with Josh Hahn, who is the vice president of DeHaan. DeHaan makes folding bikes, and I'm looking at what looks to me to be a road bike, but Josh just told me it's a touring bike. Tell me a little bit about it.
Well, what we have here is the bike is called the Tornado, and it is a breakaway bicycle, which means that the frame separates into two pieces, and you pack it into a small airline-legal suitcase in about 15 minutes. So you can basically take your bike and fly anywhere with it. And this particular bike is it's a steel-framed touring bike. It has a very classical touring geometry. It uses Tengay Prestige tubing. It's a very versatile bicycle because you can set it up with skinny tires or up to 40C tires with fenders. There are brackets for pannier racks as well. So it's really a bicycle that you can take overseas. You can go to Spain or Italy, and you can just ride on your own bicycle. So you don't need to be on a rental in this beautiful place that on a rental bike that may or may not fit you. So the concept of being able to take your own bike anywhere in the world is something that we think is fantastic.
How long does it take to break down? How long does it take to put that back together?
It takes about 15 minutes, 10 if you're very good. So this bicycle uses Ritchie breakaway technology. So we've licensed the technology from Tom Ritchie, it's about 15 minutes to pack down or to build back up.
What's the suggested retail on a bike like that?
This bicycle will retail for $1,899, that includes the suitcase that it packs into.
And sizes it's available in, conventional sizes?
Yes, from 50 to 60 centimeters.
And speaking of famous names like Tom Ritchie, I'm seeing a bike over here. It's a mountain bike, and it says Joe Murray on the side. Tell me about this mountain bike here. And by the way, before Josh does, I have to tell you, if you've got a concept in your mind of folding bikes, you're thinking incorrectly when you think about this bike. Tell us about this one.
Well, this bike is called the Fuego, and it's a pretty hot full suspension mountain bike. Again, it's in the breakaway category, so the frame actually separates into two pieces using some Dahan patented technology. Again, it takes about 15 minutes to pack, and it's a design that we worked on with Joe Murray, who, if you don't know, was the first U.S. mountain bike champion, and he's one of the top names in bike design these days. It uses some very clever technology that Joe developed with us, and it's a very good riding mountain bike, just on its own, even if you never pack it away. But again, the great thing is that if you go to Moab or someplace with just fantastic riding, you can take your own bike. You don't have to be on a rental.
And this bike, I have to tell you, if you look at it, it's got disc brakes. It's got you know, alloy cranks. It's really beautiful. Tell us about, you know, 26-inch tires. It's a standard mountain bike, so don't start thinking that this is going to be, you know, a small-tired bike with a really tall head tube. Tell us about the kind of components that you put on a bike like this.
Well, we put the same components on this bike that you'd find on a Specialized or a Trek at the same price point. So if we didn't tell you that this was a portable bike, you wouldn't know. So, for instance, there's a RockShox Reba fork. They're Avid disc brakes. We use American Classic hubs. Everything on there is race ready. So everything on it is standard.
And when I walked up, the first thing I asked Josh was, that bike comes apart? Because when you look at it, you won't believe it. And I'm going to put a picture on the website so that you can see what it looks like. But Josh, besides these high-end bikes that you've got, you've also got some more conventional folding bikes. What's new in your conventional style folding bikes?
Well, one new bike, which is really quite nice, is a bike called the Mew P8. And it folds in 15 seconds. You throw it right into a little soft sack, sling it over your shoulder, and so you can get on the train, or you can get on the bus, or you could take it up into your dorm room or your apartment. And it's just very, very convenient urban mobility.
Real good. Excellent. Josh, thank you so much for taking the time. I appreciate it. Good luck at the show.
Thanks a lot, Dave.
So again, I don't know what your concept of a folding bike is and what you're used to seeing when you think of a folding bike, but I'm going to recommend that you go to the website and that you go to the gallery section, the photo gallery, and you take a look at the photos of these Dahans. They really are amazing. A lot of the ones that I saw there in the booth, you just would have no idea that they came apart, as I said in the interview. And it was great because just as I was leaving, a woman came up to Josh and she said, "Show me how this comes apart." And you could see in her eyes, she didn't believe it. And Josh set to taking it apart. And it really was amazing how easy it is to do. So I put a link in the show notes to the Dahan website. And of course, as I said, there are photos in the photo section. Well, next, it was time for me to go out and start riding some bikes. And before I went out to test ride some bikes, I stopped by with the folks from Mavic Neutral Support because, as I told you yesterday, it was really cool to have the yellow motorcycle following you around on the course. You felt like you were in the Tour de France or something. And I wanted to find out a little bit about what they do and a little bit about the support they were giving to the folks at the Interbike Outdoor Demo. So I had the opportunity to speak with Jason Elhart from Mavic, and this is what he told me about the services that they provide.
I'm sitting here with Jason Elhart from Mavic Neutral Support. I told you yesterday that Mavic is out here with their bright yellow car and their bright yellow bikes and their bright yellow motorcycle, and they're out here supporting everybody as they're testing the bikes. Jason, tell me what you guys are doing here and how it's been going.
Well, we've got a couple things going on this weekend. Over the last 2 days at Outdoor Demo, we've been supporting anybody who's test riding or riding bikes out here in Boulder City. This morning we had what's called the Hangover Ride. We had about 200 riders that were riding down to Lake Mead and back. So we had a neutral service car, a neutral service motorcycle, and a pit at the turnaround. So we were supporting all 200 riders.
Okay, sorry, I got to jump in here with a couple of comments. First of all, it was at this point in the interview when we had to stop, and I had to press stop on my recorder because, I don't know, five or six people pulled up all at the same time with the bikes that they had just borrowed to go out and try, and they needed to adjust their seat height or they needed to adjust where their saddle was back or forth, and it probably was another 10 minutes before we were able to get back to the interview. Now, before I do get back to the interview, one other thing. Jason mentioned something called the Hangover Ride. Now, this is a sort of a throwback to when Interbike used to be in Anaheim, California, just down the road from Disneyland. And there was a time when there were sort of informal rides that took place about 6 in the morning before the doors to the show opened. And people would go out and they'd go for a ride. And it was really sort of just a fun thing. Well, in the last few years, they've instituted what's called the Hangover Ride. And this is a ride that takes place early in the morning. You have to leave the Sands Convention Center by 7 a.m. to get on the bus and head out over to Boulder City. And they do about a 25-mile ride out to Lake Mead and back on some roads that are not heavily trafficked. So it's a good place to go out and do a ride. And it's a fun event. It's a great networking event, and you can go out on your own bike, or you can borrow one of the bikes from somebody at the expo. Now, I had every intention on heading out there this morning on my Colnago. The problem was I had to upload the podcast, and I had so many problems last night with the Interbike access here. I had to go to a Starbucks down the road to use their wireless access. By the time I was done, I had missed the Hangover Ride. But they had about 250 riders out there today, and I'm told it was a really fun event. So I'm going to have to come back next year to do it, and I'll let you know all about it when I do. So let's get back to the interview with Jason.
But these are all, you know, brand new bikes, all tuned by their respective companies, so the best ride possible. What kind of technical support services have you had to provide?
Well, you know, anybody that's ridden a new bike knows that cables stretch and, you know, brakes go out of adjustment, that sort of thing. So we are taking care of that along the ride. We're also taking care of a lot of flat tires. We had to replace, you know, the easiest thing for us to do is actually just to throw in one of our wheels that's got a tire ready to go. And then we can take care of a flat tire, you know, put in a new tube for somebody later on. But with our service cars and our motorcycles that can carry, you know, we can carry 30 to 40 wheels. So it's easier for us just to hop out and switch a wheel for somebody during the ride, and we'll switch it back afterwards when they're done.
Now, of course, you know, you've got these cars and these motorcycles. It's not for an event like this. What other kinds of events have you personally been to this year?
This year, well, where to start? We started with the Tour California in February, and since then I've worked in probably 45 states and 6 different countries. So we've been all over the world during the Tour de France and every major stage race in the U.S. and every one-day race in the U.S. that we, U.S. National Championships, and just about any race you can name we've been to.
So tell me what a typical race would be like for you. I know that you've gone all over the world. You've been to a lot of different states, a lot of different races. Tell me about the resources that you bring and some of the things that you do to support the racers out on the racing circuit.
Well, we're actually very resource heavy. We support just in the United States probably over 100 race days a year, which means we need mechanics, we need drivers for the vehicles, we need technical guys in our warehouse putting bikes together and making sure all of our equipment runs smoothly. So the Maverick Neutral Service Program itself has a box truck, a 20-foot box truck filled with wheels and bikes. We haul a trailer behind that. It carries one of our cars and extra wheels and more gear and parts. We will have 5 race support cars, 2 race support motorcycles, 20 bicycles, over 150 wheel sets that we would bring to a typical race, to something like the Tour of Georgia or to the U.S. National Championships. Races like Philadelphia, they just changed the name, but it used to be the U.S. Pro Championships in Philadelphia, where they're running men and women. We would typically need all 5 cars and both motorcycles, which means 7 drivers, 7 mechanics. Let's see, that would be 15 bicycles and well over 100 wheel sets just to support a single race.
What do you carry in the cars? Besides the bikes on top and the wheel sets, what do you carry inside the car?
Inside the car, we would generally have a tool kit for the mechanic. He would have a box of just about every pedal that's made that we can put on the bikes. If somebody needs a bike switch, we want to make sure we have the correct pedals for them. We would carry 10 wheel sets inside the car, plus the ones on the roof. And then odds and ends that sometimes we run up against. You know, it's oftentimes we carry food and water that we can hand out to the riders if they're in need. Or if there's an issue with their team car getting up to them, we're sort of the first line of defense if their team car can't get to them.
So Whereas a lot of other component companies will sponsor various teams, I'm guessing that this is Mavic's way of sponsoring everyone all at once instead of just specializing with one team or another.
Yeah, exactly. And the good thing about it is we're always the good guys. You know, we get to help anybody who needs it instead of just a single team or certain riders.
And that's what you've been doing out here. Just this interview is going to seem a little disjointed because as we've been standing here, you know, 15 or 20 different people have come up, and mainly all they're asking for is Allen wrenches because they want to change their seat height or they want to change their handlebar position or something like that. And that's primarily what Mavic's been doing out here. But I know everybody has really appreciated your being here because then they know that they don't need to carry all their tools with them in a pack or in their jersey pocket. And so that's been real great. Anything really unusual happen here or any good stories from here?
Nothing really unusual here, but as you can imagine, I mean, supporting over 100 race days a year, what would be unusual for a lot of people is pretty typical for us. It's not unusual for us to see broken parts or trying to fix things on the fly or making sure that bikes can just get to the finish line. You know, whether it's working or not, we just need to keep it rolling.
Okay, so I don't know if you're even going to be able to answer this because it's on the spot. What's the strangest thing you've seen happen out there on the road?
Oh, boy, the strangest thing that I've seen happen. I might have to think about it for a little bit, but I did a couple of weeks ago. I was at a race in Chicago, and I saw a guy that got caught up behind a crash and actually broke his entire frame into three different pieces. So that one was pretty severe.
I'm not going to ask who made the frame, but what was it made out of? What kind of material?
It was carbon fiber, but the good news is we got him on one of our carbon fiber bikes and got him to the finish line.
So they really are the good guys. Here was a guy who figured he wasn't going to finish the race, and here came the cavalry in their yellow and black car, and they helped him out. Jason, thanks so much. I appreciate it very much.
You bet.
So then I put Jason on the spot, and he came up with a pretty good story about a guy who broke his carbon fiber frame. But then, wouldn't you know, as soon as I put the mic away, he came up with an even better story. So I'm just going to relate it to you. He told me a story about a road race that he was supporting where a rider literally broke their drop bars on both sides, just a couple of inches from the handlebar stem. So you can imagine, as he tells it, here comes this rider going down the road. His handlebars, his brake levers, everything is dangling next to the fork, next to the front wheel. And he's holding on really, really close to the handlebar stem and trying to steer the bike. Now he was able to do it and he was able to keep going. Now he comes into the pit area and he figures, great, I'm going to be able to get a new handlebar. I'm going to be able to get this fixed. Excellent. And right as he started heading into the pit area, he realized something and he started yelling to everybody, I can't reach my brakes. And everybody had to reach out and grab him and stop him. And he was able to get a new handlebar and he was able to finish the race. But wouldn't you know, that was after I had turned the microphone off, but it's a real story. You can ask Jason. The Mavic Neutral Technical Support was doing a great job out there and really providing a lot of comfort to people and helping them out a lot. And then, of course, this afternoon, I noticed they were giving out free beer. So, you know, they really are the good guys. Well, after interviewing Jason, it was finally time to get out there and actually ride a bike. And I had prearranged with the folks over at Orbea that I was going to have the opportunity to ride one of their brand new 2007 Orcas. I made the arrangements through Noreen from Team Rubicon, somebody that we've talked about here on the show. So hi, Noreen, and thanks for making the arrangements for me. Now, I don't have an interview for you today with anybody from Orbea because I'm going to be doing that at the show on Thursday, and I'll be bringing that to you in that show. But in the meantime, I wanted to tell you a little bit about my initial comments after having ridden the Orca. Now, the bike that I rode was a 54-centimeter. It came with the new SRAM Force components, Mavic Kazerium ES wheels. It had a Thompson seat post, Selle Italia saddle, an FSA headset, an ITM carbon stem and handlebar. And all I can say about this bike is stiff. This is an amazing bike. Really, really stiff, really responsive, but still a very comfortable ride. Very little transmitted road feel when you're riding the bike. And the first thing on this course that they put you on, pretty much it's flat for, I don't know, maybe a quarter mile, and then there's a downhill. And when I first took it downhill, I can't even explain it to you. it felt like something was pulling me downhill. No joke. So I immediately turned around, rode back up the hill, and went down again. And this time made sure that I built up some speed before I went because I wanted to see what happened. It seemed like this bike just wanted to go faster and faster. You know, sometimes you'll get on your bike and you'll be descending on a hill and you feel like you reach a limit at which you're just not going to go that much faster. This bike felt like it had afterburners. It literally felt like I was being towed downhill. It just wanted to go that fast. And even though it wanted to go that fast, it remained stable. The steering was straight. There wasn't a hint of wobble, just really comfortable. And I felt very confident on it, even after only having ridden it for maybe 20 or 30 minutes. Now, after going downhill, I thought, well, let's see how well it climbs. Climbed beautifully, whether in the saddle or standing up. Very little flex in the rear end. Remember I told you it was stiff? No flex. All of your power was going right into the rear wheel and propelling you up the hill. Now, one of the things that I noticed about Orbea and about their booth at the outdoor demo was that it was literally one of the most crowded booths at the entire outdoor demo. And at first, when I saw how much staff Orbea had, I was thinking, yeah, what do they need all that for? But in the end, they absolutely needed it because when you walked up, sometimes it was impossible to find somebody to talk to. There were so many people swarming around their booth. So what was interesting was when I was out riding, there were a lot of other people riding Orbeas also. And, you know, if I was out riding a bike from brand A or brand B, and somebody else was riding a brand A or brand B, they pretty much didn't say anything to me. But riding the Orbea, anybody else who was on one pulled up next to me and they wanted to talk to me about it. And even if they weren't on one, they'd pull up next to me and say, hey, what do you think of that bike? So it really seems like this was a very hot commodity at the outdoor demo. And we'll see what it looks like at the expo. So what were people saying? The first guy that pulled up next to me, and we were talking for quite some time as we rode back and forth on the course, he said that he too was really surprised at how really stiff and responsive it was, yet how comfortable it was. And he was the one who said to me, this really seems like it would be a great bike for a long distance. And we both agreed that whether that was a long distance race or just a long distance cruise on a Century or something, we both agreed that it was going to be a really nice bike. Now, the next guy who pulled up next to me, he was not on an Orbea, and he wanted to know how light the bike was. He pulls up and he says, hey, dude, how light is that bike? And I said, it's light. And he said, did they give you a weight? I said, no. So we both stopped and he picked up the bike. He picks it up. He puts it down. He looks absolutely amazed, says that he needs to go test one. And then as he rides away, he says, dude, that's just not light. It's scary light. And he meant it totally in a good way. So no doubt about it. This is a light and stiff bike. Really excellent climber, amazing descender, and something that I think that you would really like on a long ride. Now, coming up later in the week, I'm going to be interviewing the folks at Orbea about this bike and about some of their other offerings, so stand by for that. In the meantime, I've put links in the show notes to their website, and thanks again to listener Noreen for setting that up for me. It was a great ride. Now, next, after Orbea, I rounded the corner and went over to see the folks at Scott USA. And one of the reasons I wanted to go ride their bikes was because I had gotten an email from listener Jason. And Jason was saying that he's been looking at their bikes and he's really liked them. And he wanted to hear what I saw at the show and what I thought of the new Scott bike. So I had the opportunity of road testing the Scott CR1 Equipe carbon fiber bike. And a comment about that, you know, it's going to seem like all I did was go to the show and seek out carbon fiber bikes. But I want to tell you what I did when I went up to a booth. I would walk up, I would find somebody, and I would say, hi, I am here to ride your highest end road bike that would be good for somebody who likes to do long distance riding, because that's what I like to do. And from a lot of emails that I get from you folks, that's what you like to do as well. Every single time I did that, I was handed a carbon fiber bike. So please, those of you who are into titanium or into aluminum, don't think that I was giving you the short shrift. It wasn't my choice. It was what I was handed every single time. So let's talk about this bike. One of the things that listener Jason asked me about was, you know, it just seems like he doesn't see a lot of Scott bikes out there. Now, that may be the area that Jason lives in, because I do see a lot of Scott bikes. And they are a Pro Tour bike as well, because the Saunier Duval team rides on exactly this frame that I had the chance of riding today. So again, it's the Scott CR1 Equipe. It's a carbon fiber bike, and we're going to learn a little bit more about how Scott makes their carbon fiber bikes, because they do some unique things. But one of the things that I learned about it is the frame itself, just the frame, is 880 grams on the CR1, which is a real nice light bike. But if you think that's light, apparently when I go to the show tomorrow, I'm going to see a new bike that they call the Addict. And out of the box, with record, Campy Record components, 13 pounds and about $10,500 retail. So something to look forward to. But let me tell you about the bike that I rode. Came with Campy Chorus components, Ritchie stem, Ritchie bar, FSA headset, a physics saddle, fulcrum wheels, and the ride was pretty nice. It was a bit plusher than the bike that I had just ridden, and I think that some of my comments that I wrote down while I was riding, well, not, you know, when I stopped, of course, but some of the comments that I wrote down, I think were colored by the fact that I had just ridden the Orbea. I think that I needed, you know, to go ride a mountain bike or something in between, because it may not have been entirely fair to the CR1, because they're completely different rides. Remember, the Orbea is more of a stiffer bike, good for sprinting and hill climbing. This was more, in my opinion, a more of a compliant bike, better for long distances and a bit more of a plush, more compliant ride. I found that there was a little bit more transmitted road feel to the rider when riding, but it had a real good long distance feel. There was a chance, once you came down the hill on the course, you were supposed to turn around, but if you made a right turn, you ended up on a fairly long straightaway that was a good place to go out and just cruise and try to get up to speed on a relatively flat section of road. And I found the bike to be really, really comfortable on that flat section of road. Yes, a little bit more transmitted road feel, but it didn't seem like after 100 or 200 miles that was going to make much of a difference, because it was just very comfortable as a cruising bike at nice speed. Overall, certainly a really nice bike. Definitely a good bike. It just depends on what you want. If you want something super stiff, if you're big on sprinting and climbing, at least in my opinion, this may not be the bike for you. But if you want something a bit more compliant, good for long distances, something that's going to give you a really nice ride, this could be a bike for you. Just keep in mind, your mileage may vary. You know, like I've told you in the past, when you go out to look at a bike, everything is subjective. Every single bike that I rode out here at Interbike was absolutely amazing, and I would be overjoyed to own any of the bikes that I'm talking to you about, because they were all amazing. So when it comes down to some of these things, I'm splitting hairs here, and it's all very subjective. The difference between a bike that you may like or a bike that you may not like all comes down to the ride. It comes down to your butt on the saddle, your feet in the pedals, and that's what's going to make the difference and tell you which of any of these amazing bikes that I rode are going to be right for you. So get down to your local independent bike dealer, when they get back from Interbike, of course, and go out and test ride all the bikes. It's the only way you're going to know. So after my ride, I had a chance to speak with Andrew Doble from Scott about why it is that the Scott feels a little bit different than some of the other carbon bikes that I'd ridden. Here's what he had to say.
The big principle behind how it rides different is our construction process. So as opposed to using a monocoque design, which is all one piece, you end up with a lot of material you can't control where it goes, or a lug design where you end up having more weight at each joint, we actually use a process called CR1, carbon for racing is the acronym for it. What we basically do is hand lay each tube over a mandrel, so it's actually made, so a top tube, down tube, head tube, they're each made separately. We can butt the tube so it's thinner where it needs to be, thicker where it needs to be, do it difference layup in carbon, so we get the ride out of it. The ends are then precision mitered and actually put together like an aluminum frame would be, so tube to tube, and then we use what's called carbon welding, where the tubes are actually bonded together at that point, and then there's a final wrap of carbon that goes over that joint, and what you end up with is a frame that has a lot less material at each joint than a lug frame would, and a much more controlled tubing diameter and inner diameter and strength than what a monocoque would. And the end result is a bike that rides unbelievably well.
And it's a light frame. What's the weight of this frame?
We've actually got down to a complete bike at with CR1 at about 13.9 pounds. I know guys that are doing bikes lighter than that complete. Frame weight itself is 880 grams for the frame. That's not all the story, because that's our technology we've been using for the past couple years. We've actually gone the next step this year in actually doing a new molding process on the front triangle. So the new models this year are the Addict and the Road Bike and the Spark for mountain bike. We've taken our CR1 process and moved it to a new level where we actually make the top tube, head tube, and down tube in all one piece. Everyone's saying, well, that's monocoque. Similar process, but what we've been able to do is take out all the excess material that monocoque usually leaves behind. We can still butt the tubes like we have with our CR1 process, but eliminate about 11% of the material in the head tube with no decrease in stiffness or strength in that way. So in terms of weight, you're now talking about a road frame that's coming in at 790 grams and a mountain bike frame with shock that's coming in at just under 4 pounds. So again, we've pushed the envelope to a whole new level, waiting for everyone else to catch up for us.
The CR1, who have you targeted that bike at?
For this year, still able as a race bike. I mean, we didn't do any real changes to geometry, but we did change the speccing on a little bit, going to compact drive trains, a little bit of a taller front end on it. So for the guy that's not the racer but still wants the performance out of it, because you're still talking a frame that's, you know, less than 1,000 grams for a frame, still rides unbelievably well, but isn't going to cost at the same level as what the Addict does. The other big difference with the Addict is it uses an integrated seat post. So again, shaving weight, CR1 still using a standard seat post on it. So just slight tweaks to it to fit for a different purpose at each level.
Great. Thank you so much for spending the time with me. Appreciate it.
Anytime.
Well, by this point, it was getting close to the end of the day, and everybody was getting ready to pack up, because after these 2 days at the outdoor demo, they, of course, have to go to 3 days on the trade show floor at the Sands Convention Center. And I've already told you what a long walk that is. Anyway, there was one other bike that I wanted to try, and unfortunately, I didn't have the longest amount of time to ride it, and that was a bike from a company called Blue Bicycles. I had the chance to go out on the road on the Blue RC6, which is their top-of-the-line carbon fiber, again, road bike. And of course, when I got out on the road, I had to stop off at the Mavic guys because my seat post was too low. And when I bent down and started to look at what was on the bike while I was doing that, I noticed something. And that was that other than the Dura-Ace components and the frame itself and the American Classic wheels, Max's tires, everything else on the bike had the name Aerus, A-E-R-U-S. Apparently, it's a component company that is somehow very closely related to Blue Bicycles. So the handlebar, the stem, the headset, the seat post, even the bottle cages were all from Aerus. This bike is a sloping top tube design, which is not one of my favorite geometries when it comes to bikes. It was in the medium large size, and the sticker on it said that was a 52 centimeter seat tube and a 56 centimeter top tube. In the short time I did have a chance to ride it, I can tell you that there was not as much road feel as some other bikes that I've been on, but nowhere near as stiff as bikes like the Orbea or the Colnago that I told you about yesterday. A very predictable ride, certainly not twitchy at all. And I did notice that it handled bumps quite well as well. On some of the bigger bumps, there was a little bit of a kickback from the rear wheel than I'm personally used to on my bike. But it wasn't such that it was something that I wouldn't get used to or something that would keep me from recommending the bike. Overall, a real consistent bike, very good feel on the road. I'd like a little bit more time to ride it. But because I didn't have that much time, I did have the chance to interview somebody from Blue. Or rather, I should say somebody closely related to Blue whose hair was blue today. And that was Paul Gonzalez, who is the owner of Rolling Thunder in Canada at www.rollingthundercanada.com. And they're the exclusive Canadian dealer for Blue. So I had a chance to talk to him about the bike, and this is what he had to say. I'm with Paul Gonzalez from Blue Bicycles Competition Cycles. And I just rode the RC6, which is their carbon road bike. Tell me a little bit about that bike and who you would target that bike toward.
The RC6 comes with Dura-Ace and Aerus composite components, like the seat posts, stem, handlebars, etc., which is the sister company to Blue Competition.
Who would you say that bike is targeted toward? What kind of a rider?
I'd say I can tell you it's not a criterium style rider. It's more of a longer stage race. Instead of it being a 40 kilometer criterion is perhaps more like a 60 or 80 mile or more road race.
So it could be for the road racer, it could also be for the century rider and more?
Absolutely. It provides a high degree of comfort. But as I get older, I try and ride smarter. And whatever power I apply to the pedals, I want it to go to the back wheel to make me progress. I'm not as young as I used to be, and by choosing equipment strategically, I can keep up despite my age.
Now, Paul says this about his age, but I'm looking at his hair, and it's bright blue. I guess that's a company thing. But let's talk about transferring the power to the rear wheels. I notice it's got an interesting rear triangle. Can you talk about that?
I can. I don't know if I can make any sense of it.
Please do.
But the chainstay is, the carbon fiber is treated differently in the two parts of the bike. The seat stay is considered more having to do with comfort than power transfer. So the carbon fiber for that is set up to be supple, both in the shape and the layering and the composites used. Whereas the chainstay is set up to be super stiff to just whatever power you apply to the pedal. You don't want the bottom bracket to shift. You just want that power to go to the back wheel to make you go further, faster, higher. And that's how they treat the two parts of the frame differently. Even though it's both carbon fiber, it's done differently. If you did the chainstay treatment all the way around the bike, if you had fillings at the beginning of the ride, you wouldn't have the fillings at the end of the ride. In your teeth, that is.
And I notice it's a lugged construction. Is that the way that most of the blue bikes are made?
Well, the RC6 is a tube and lug construction, but by the time they're finished, the final piece ends up being like a monocoque piece. It's true that when they first started with the carbon piece, the RC6, and they're starting out, it's relatively inexpensive to come up with custom alloy lugs with the carbon tubing. Because they didn't just simply want to rebadge something. They wanted to bring something with merit, with design, some to it. And because it comes from a racer heritage, they brought that to bear. Now that the company has grown, they can afford the molding and the tooling cost to come up with custom carbon lugs. And then the finished process, you end up with something that's custom, lighter, and equally as stiff as any of the alloy pieces.
I noticed that you've got a lot of interest on your cross bike, and that's been something that everybody's wanted to try here at the Outdoor Demo. Tell me a little bit about that bike.
Well, there's actually two. There's an alloy version and an all-carbon version. And I can tell you from my own perspective, it brought the 12-year-old out in me. Certainly it's appropriate for cross, but I also find it's being sold a lot to multi-sport athletes and other people as an SUB, like a sport utility bicycle. So a foul weather bike, as an example. There was an occasion where instead of, crap, it's snowing, it's like, all right, it's snowing. You know, it's a different paradigm. And like I say, it's just a fun bike to have as part of your arsenal.
And what's the model number of those two bikes?
The cross bike, the alloy one, is the CX6.5, and the all-carbon is the CXE. And forgive me, it's not all-carbon. It's like the RC4, alloy lugged carbon tubes, but still gorgeous. And it's painted the color of Georgia mud, which I find that amuses me. I got a chance to go down to Georgia for the Tour de Georgia, and I noticed that the construction cones and the mud on the side of the road had this very particular color, orange color to it. And so you've got a blue bike painted orange, and that just appeals to my perverse sense of humor.
And where do they find out more about the bikes? Where can they go online?
Well, if you're Canadian, you can go to RollingThunderCanada.com. If you're American or worldwide, RideBlue.com.
Excellent. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, sir.
And that was the Outdoor Demo Day 2. A lot of bikes, a lot to do. I needed way more time, and unfortunately, I didn't have it. I know you're crying for me, but still. Tomorrow, the actual trade show begins. I've got to get this podcast finished and in the can so that I can get it uploaded and get to sleep, because I've got a lot of walking to do tomorrow. So, hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Fredcast, this special episode for the 2006 Interbike Outdoor Demo and Expo. I'll be back tomorrow with another show. Until then, enjoy the end of the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.